Okay, we'll try to take what's normally a very esoteric topic in terms of the theory behind it. Exactly what drives the halacha is very complex, but we'll try to reduce it to manageable proportions. The title of the shir of Bittul Beroiv and Bittul Beshishim, but before we get to talk an actuality about Bittul Beroiv and Bittul Beshishim, we have to consider the context in which those halachas take place, what the purpose of Bittul is, and what the issues in Bittul are. Then we can first, from that context, come to an appreciation of what exactly is taking place in the halacha. I would just put forth, just to show really how surprising all of this is, that even the notion of Bittul Beshishim was so well established in the halacha that we would think that either it must be a halacha l'moshe b'sinai, or it must be a pasuk somehow. And the fact is that it's neither of those two. It's an umdana, it's a hashara, an assessment that Chazal made. And we'll see, later we'll come back to it, that it's not always the driving force in the halacha of Bittul Beshishim. We'll come back to that. It's not as universal as we imagine it to be. Now, before we come to questions of Bittul, there are two separate notions in the halacha. The halacha considers both, and they're two separate types of issues. There's a notion that we call heter mitztaref le'isur, that we combine heter and isur to produce an isur effect. Now, in simple terms, let's put this in simple terms, what the shaila would be. Normally, we say that whenever a person has to eat to violate an isur of the Torah, so he has to eat a kezias, and he has to eat a b'chdei achilas pras. And the amount of time it takes to eat 3x, 4x, each shita of the Rishonim, according to what it holds. Now, suppose a person eats chatzi kezayis, chayla, chazer, etc. So we say it's pochus mikashir. So we paskin that chatzi shir is awesome in a Torah, but one doesn't get malchus for chatzi shir. Now suppose that one takes a half a gezayis of chalev and puts it on a half a gezayis of bread and has a sandwich, a chalev sandwich. So that in kidei achilas pras, in the requisite amount of time, they ate an entire gezayis together. Could be you could eat it even b'ze'achazel within this amount of time. But now, in effect, really what's the question that we have is the achila, the eating which took place, is no longer insignificant. Why? Because it's now rolled into a significant eating of a gezayis. Just happens to be that half of it was asur and half of it was mutter. But it's not inconsequential, the eating anymore. When one eats half a gezayis, that's halachically, in terms of malchus, inconsequential. But now there's an achila chashuva. There's a significant achila which took place. Now, this is one issue. It's an issue, and it's debated in Shas. The halacha, we say it only applies to kochim and to nozer. So if a nozer were to eat a half a gezayis of grapes together with a half a gezayis of something else, in kashir, kedei achilas pras, you'd be chayav malchus for such a thing. This is a halacha nezirus and a halacha kochim. Halacha lemaisa, we don't apply it to shari surah. That's hetem mitztaref le'isur. Then we have a separate shayla, which is also debated. And that separate shayla is called tamki ikra, meaning Iker means I took a piece of treif and I ate a piece of treif. That's Iker, the essence of the treif itself. Tam is merely an extract of it. Now, tam could come lahalocha in different ways, as we'll see. But Tom, I didn't take a piece of the chaylev and eat it, but rather the flavor of the chaylev went into something else. So I now have, for example, I can have a kezias of bread, and there's no visible chaylev, but the flavor of the chaylev has been absorbed into the bread. So that's what we call tam ki ikar. That Aruch HaShulchan explains, based really on the Ramban, I believe, that these two questions really do not overlap. One could take any position on one and any position on the other one. Just because I hold one way on one shayla, no way dictates what I would hold in the other shayla. Why? Because each particular shayla has its own maila. On one hand, the shayla of Hetem Etz Taref Le'Isar deals with the fact that I have real mamoshes of Isar. There's a half a kezias of chaylev. For the nozer, there's a half a kezias of anovim. We're not dealing with mere flavor. He bit into, he ate some grapes. He ate a piece of chaylev. So there's something real here. Tam, on the other hand, one could say, well, tam is tam. It's just the essence of the thing is gone already. It's not here anymore. It left some imprint behind, flavor, but flavor is not the real McCoy. On the other hand, Hetem Etz Taref Le'Isar has an obvious limitation. And that's for the reason that the Nozer weighed a half a gezias of grapes and a half a gezias of bread. The bread was untainted by the grapes. Nothing to do with the grapes. Whereas, when we come to Tam Ki Ikar, on one hand, we don't have the essence of the Isar, there's nothing here. But on the other hand, the flavor is felt throughout. When I bite into the piece of bread, I have the flavor of the chazer in the bread. So each particular shayla has its own maila, has its own reason that perhaps it would be awesome. What's agreed, clearly agreed, is Hetem Etz Taref Le'Isar does not apply except by Kotcha and Benazilas, Lahaloha Lemais. Tam Ki Ikar is a whole course celebra in the Rishonim, what its status is. And it really is, we'll see, a very surprising machlokas, because it would seem, in fact, that there are two psukim in the Torah which dictate that it's osur. Now, what's surprising in the Machlokas Rishonim is, there are Shitas, Rashi, apparently the Rambam, that hold that Tam Ki Ikar is only osur midrabbanan. Zera midrabbanan. Apparently, that since if I'm going to get, it's a pretty logical Isar, in that standpoint. If I'm going to get the Tamar Chazer, I mean, how far am I away from eating the Chazer next? So they said Tam is Ki Ikar, but that's a Dinder Rabbanan, not a Dinder Isar. That's the Shita of Rashi and the Rambam. And on the other hand, though, many Rishayim hold that Tam Ki Ikar is the Raisa. We'll see soon clearly how the Raisa, that according to many, in fact, it can revoke even Malkus as well. Not Malkus meaning that if I take a piece of bread and it has tam of chazer in that piece of bread and I eat a kezias of bread, now I obviously didn't eat a kezias of chazer. Some flavor of chazer went into the kezias of bread, but there's not a kezias of chazer here. Afal pikeid, if tam kikas the raisin, we'll see a major school of thought in Rishonim says that the person is chayav malkus feeding one kezias. Now, to backtrack a moment, how could it be that Tam Ki Ikar is not in the Torah? Right? We have two parshiyas in the Torah. We'll talk about one of them for the moment. But two parshiyas in the Torah which indicate that Tam Ki Ikar is not in the Torah, which is, it is in the Torah. Let's take the most obvious one. The most obvious one is the parsha of Klei Midian, after Moshe Rabbeinu prosecutes the war with Midian. So we have a specific parasha in the Torah which tells us those chukas haTorah, another zayis chukas haTorah, and it goes on to tell us the halachas of kasher and kelim. That's what is the source of kasher and kelim. It's used with water, it's ba'ish, taviro ba'ish, etc. Now, what did we have to kasher the kelim from Midian for? For what reason? What was there?
Only
tam. Otherwise, all you'd have to do is just wash it out. If you're dealing with bed, so take it and scrub it clean and put it to use. So what was the problem with clay Midian? We're assuming that it was for the purpose of using kelim ben yomov, which ain't a ben yomov mutter any year, which is a little bit sort of unsettling, but that's, I mean, clear that that's the pshat. That, because if it's an Eino Ben Yom, if it was more than 24 hours after it was used, there'd be no problem in the first place. Right? The fact that we kasher something which has been made treif more than 24 hours before, yeah, that's Xerim of Midrabbanon. It's Xerim of Midrabbanon. They were concerned that if we become lax about kashering, that we won't kasher on the same day that the Shaila happened either. So this way, once a pot becomes nivla, it has absorbed in a flavor that it should not have absorbed, so now we're very standoffish. We put it away, we pack it up, after Shaila, after Esther Rov, what to do? I mean, if we just took the halacha min haTorah and put it on the side, and after 24 hours, you'd start to use it again. So we would not be so quick to be locking it up and putting it away. And inevitably, if we wouldn't be, so someone would come along and put it back into use in the same day, they wouldn't realize, oh, it wasn't 24 hours, it was 24 hours. Now we know, no matter what, until it's fixed. You need a fix. So we stay away from it. Now, so how could it be that we have a parsha of Klei Midian of Hagolah? So what else does it mean except Tamkikas Midoraisa? And this really is one of the major sources of many Rishonim that Tamkikas Midoraisa. I mean, they say that's the source of the Torah. They say that many sugis or shas would seem to indicate that. But the source of the Torah is the parasha of Klei Midian. Now Rashi says in one place that the reason that we don't learn out from Klei Midian is because we have a pasuk by Nazirus, also Mishra Sanovim, which also indicates the inyan of Tam. But those are shnei ksuvim aboim ke'echarein b'lamda. That we have a klal in the Torah that if we have two psukim which teach us the same lesson, that unless we can justify why we have the two psukim, so we do not derive one from the other. That's a general principle in Shas of shnei ksuvim aboim ke'echarein b'lamda. So Rashi invokes that principle in this particular case to tell us that that's the reason that we don't learn out from Klei Midian. Now there's an obvious problem on this, yeah.
I wanted to ask what the actual background was in Klei Midian.
In Klei Midian, when Moshe Rabbeinu prosecuted a war against Midian, and there was a tremendous amount of booty, including all types of utensils, and the halacha dictates, so that's what the parshas and parshas matos, that they have to kasher those kelim before they can be put into use. So that's the background by Klei Midian. So why do you have to kasher them? So good, so they were used for treifas, but now what's there now? Now it's clean. Tam. So if Tam is not ki'ikar, if we say Tam doesn't have the same status as the treif itself, so it's mutter. We're not Torah. It's only Yisra Darabonon. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the Yisra Darabonon, so it did not Torah. So what was the necessity of kashering it? Now, the problem that the Rishonim raise is that the answer to say that Shnei Ksuvim Aboim Ke'echar Ein Lamdin does not fully answer the question here. Why? Shnei Ksuvim Aboim Ke'echar Ein Lamdin is the following. That if I have a principle which applies, for example, to A and to B, and now I want to apply it to KC, So then you say Shnei Ksuma Bon Gevarein Melamed. For example, I taught a Tosfos this year to my Talmidim in the beginning of Masechta Kedushin. So the Mishnah says that they can get married with Dina, or with Shava Dina, with a Dina, and the value of a Dina, of a Pruta, and with Shava Pruta. That's Beis Hillel. So Tosfos wants to know, as all do all the Rishonim, what is the source that Shava Kesef, that the value of money is considered Kesef? The Torah wrote Kesef. The varied approaches to the matter. Tosfos says that we learn it out from a pasuk. Now the problem is, as the Rishonim raised, there are two psukim. There were at least two psukim, but we'll deal with the two that Tosfos is particularly concerned with. One deals with the fact that an Eved Ivri may redeem himself with kesef and shava kesef. And a second halacha is by Nezikin, if one does damage, and one is responsible to pay for that damage, one can make the remuneration whether with money or shava kesef in goods. So the question the Rishonim all raise is, why don't we invoke the principle of Shnei Ksum Rabban Ke'echarein Melamdin? And we'll say, well, the point being, well, if either halacha was intended to be a paradigm from which I should derive other halachas, but a process that we call Mamatzina, then the Torah should have written one pasuk, and that should be the paradigm for every place else in the Torah. By the fact that the Torah wrote two psukim, it obviously indicates as a minimum that it does not want us to use this as a paradigm. So therefore, if that would be the case, we would come back to our question. By Kedushin, where the Mishnah says that Shava Pruta is good, you don't have to give her money, you can give her a ring, you can give her a diamond, and that's also fine. And you can get married with that. So why is that true? Shnei Ksum Abayim Ke'echot is Ein Melamdin. There is some question exactly what Ein Melamdin means. Does Ein Melamdin just mean that we don't learn from it? It's the absence of a positive? Or in fact, it's indicative that the halacha is in fact the opposite in all other cases? That's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos and Zvachim. How to take Shnei Ksum Abayim Ke'echot Ein Melamdin. But be that as it may, that rule works. If I have A and I have a B, so I have the din of Eved Ivri, I have the din of Nezik, and now I'm trying to derive din B, C, which is Kedushin. So I say Shnei Ksum Rabban Ke'echad is not Melamdin, and therefore I don't know that the halacha by Kedushin should be that Shava Kesef is Kekesef. That's all fine if I'm trying to derive a C. But what happens if in either A or B, in its direct application, their Shnei Ksum Rabban Ke'echad and Melamdin is not relevant? So if we would want to, for example, know if a person ate a piece of chazer, does he get malchus because of tamki ikur? So say that halacha that can't learn out. That's true. But perhaps, or some other iser in the Torah that I didn't deal with, is tamki ikur, what happens by truma, by challah, etc. I'll ask you, is tamki ikur by truma, also or not? Good question. But we're dealing with macholos asurais. Macholos asurais, that itself is the din by Klei Midyan itself. The whole point of the kashrut by Klei Midyan was for what reason? Because it's macholos asurais. So when it comes to at least the macholos asurais, we should be able to derive the halacha, know the halacha. That's not a derived halacha, that's explicitly the halacha that the Torah told us. That's like the Torah telling me that Be'evet Ivri, the din is Shava Kesef, it's Kekesef. So even if Shnei Ksum Abon Ke'echad Ein Melamdin, but I still know the din that Be'evet Ivri, the din Shava Kesef, it's Kekesef. So similarly, if I want to know what's the din of Tam Truma, good Shaila, Shnei Ksum Abon Ke'echad Ein Melamdin, that I can't learn, that you can invoke that for. But if I want to know what's the din of Macholos Asurais, the Torah explicitly said for Macholos Asurais, you have to kash in the Kli. So what could be... then obviously it's a problem in its truth. So what is the reason that we don't derive the halacha from the parsha of Klei Midyan? The Ramban tells us something very, very interesting. The Ramban explains Rashi, and he draws a very, very interesting parallel. We have a halacha which is also one that's not easy to understand. And that halacha is not Hechsher Kelim, but Tfilas Kelim. For what are we Toivah the Kli? For what reason? I mean, if a guy comes to my house and touches the Kelim, I have to run to the Mikvah and Toivah them. So what do I do? So what happens? I bought a Kli for a utensil from an Anjou. It's manufactured by an Anjou. I bought it from a... So what am I Toivah it for? If you tell me how to use it in the Beis HaMikdash and it becomes Tomei, good. So anytime a person that's Tomei touches it, I should have to be Toivel it. Fine. But there's no such halacha that every time that a Tomei touches a Kli, that we have to run to the Mikvah and be Toivel the Kli. Lahayu v'leinuvah. Except in Zahiris and Tyrus, but without that, we don't have Zahiris and Tyrus today. So what are we being Toivel Kalim for? For what? What's Tilas Kalim? So the Ramban tells us the following, that this is a Milo, and we'll come back to give an explanation of that, but it's a special halacha that the Torah gave, and I view it not in the sense of removing a negative so much as endowing it with a positive. Mekadosh the Kalim, that's the way I would put it. Process of bringing it to the mikvah is to bring it to a state of Kedusha. It wasn't in a state of Kedusha now, so through the process of Tara, we're bringing it to a state of Kedusha. That's the notion of Caleb. We'll come back to that in a moment. So the Ramban says that that's the same issue that they had a kasha to claim Midian to. Just as the Torah said the utensil should be Kedusha, so the fact that it was used for Macholos Asuras is not a question in the din of Macholos Asuras, but it's parallel, in fact, to the Kedusha that the Torah wants us to have when we use Kalim, that we Motoyvel Kalim. Parallel to that, the Torah said, similarly, if it was used for non-kosher, so we Mekadosh it. But not because in and of itself, the question is, if I cook, that something's going to become treif. Let's say I cook in a kli which is not ketoivled. So it doesn't affect the status of the food. I'm not allowed to do it, but the food is kosher. So if I would hold the tam ki ikur is not menatayrus, that means if they took the kli midyan and they cooked food in it, on that day that it was captured, they captured it today from the Midianites, and they sat down and they cooked it today, the food would be kosher. But what would be lacking would be, in the terms that I would put it in, is the kedusha. That there should be mekadosh, what? Yeah, but the tam is not relevant. Tam kikah is not minatayr, according to Rashi. You can take all the tam you want from Chazer and pump it in, and then minatayr it's mutter. Nothing happened. Even on a ben yomo. That's the point. On a ben yomo. Not ben yomo is... Right, forget. If it would have been tam lifgam, even the Rishonim, which is the principal school of thought, the halacha, that tam is ki'ikar, and the tam of the utensils of Midian was also because it'll make the food tray. But even if once 24 hours have elapsed, it won't make the food tray. But we're dealing within the first 24 hour window. So the Ramban draws the parallel, to Tfilas Kalim. Now I've always thought it's a phenomenal idea. Right, in other words, to give it, in other words, means dedicated to a status of Kedusha.
Through
Hagolah? Yeah. In this case, it's through Hagolah, to remove any association with non-kosher. But that's not because that will negative, it has no negative effect. But rather, it's to sanctify it. That's the way I would put it. The purity is a sanctification. It's not that the presence of the treif will have no negative effect whatsoever, just as the non-tovel kli will have no negative effect on anything. But rather, the process is to elevate it to a certain level, to remove any association with non-kosher, not because the non-kosher will have an effect upon us.
What?
That's there because otherwise, how do you explain, according to Rashi, how could you tell me that tam ki ikers not Manatar, it says Mefurish in the Parsha of Klei Midyan. It's a Mefurish Parsha in the Torah. You have to kasha the Kalim. Now, I always thought this is a phenomenal idea, and the Ramban even just took it a step further. In Macholos Asuras, so where does the Ramban write about Macholos Asuras? It's part of Kedusha, part of the sanctity that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given us. Say for Kedusha. The notion of Kedusha is not only in the food that we eat, but the very kalim, the utensils that we use to prepare the food, also need a Kedusha. I mean, this touches an issue which is very, very significant, which touches the entire issue of Kedusha. Chazal tell us, we read Parshas Bereishis recently, that Adam HaRishon took stock of his human frailties and he was taken aback. He turns to the Rabbeinu Shalom and he says to the Rabbeinu Shalom, will the animal and I eat from one trough? He saw a whole animal kingdom. They're going to eat every day. So that's me. What am I different than they are? So I have 2 feet. They have 4 feet. An ostrich also has 2 feet. So a self-dismantler has 2 feet. A bird has 2 feet. Where am I distinct? He looked at the human frailty, at the physical form that human beings have, and he was taken aback. So the Rabbeinu Shalom answered him that the difference is that an animal will eat it unprocessed. Even we have almost a pejorative term in the English language, eat it raw, which really ultimately draws upon that an animal eats it raw. A human being has to refine it. He has to remove the waste from it. He has to cook it. He has to prepare it. We can't, our digestive system cannot deal with it. And that, he said, therein, the fact that you have to process it, your eating is distinct from the eating of an animal. Some, but many things we don't have, we have to. We won't live in this world without cooking, right? Whatever we can do, but we don't live in this world without cooking. That's the way a normal human being lives. I mean, I can't tell you that there's some exceptional person in the world, you know, that never cooked anything in his life, you know. He ate raw carrots for the rest of his life, but, you know, but by and large. We have strange ideas, but that's a subject of a different day. But we have strange notions in the modern world, and this touches a very essential aspect. Kedusha is to take, in fact, all the biological needs of a person and to raise them to a higher plane, and that is a particular school of Torah. Without Torah, there's no such mitzvahs. Without Torah, a person is subject and lives by biology. He rises and falls with it. The ability to rise above that on a consistent basis is an ability that's endowed by Torah. The Torah, in fact, has no such expectation. As the Rambam makes clear at the very beginning of Hilchos Ishus, says the Torah has no such expectation for a person that doesn't have Torah. And it's very interesting, in the 19th century, that with the rise of the reform movement in Europe, so there were those involved with that movement that went to the Emperor Franz Josef, I believe, and they told him that this is the Orthodox or an uncivilized religion. Why? Because in their code of law, in the Shulchan Aruch, they have halachas which define how a human being should conduct himself in the process of elimination, in the process of reproduction. What type of religion is this? And unfortunately for them, that Franz Josef took, in fact, exactly the opposite view. And he thought he was enthralled with the idea of the nobility that it gives to a person. This is a very essential issue. It's essential that it's a notion that's been lost in the time that we live in. The distinction in the biological needs of the animal world and the human have been blurred in the modern world. Totally blurred. The human has been removed from his pedestal. He's another biological creature. And from that standpoint, people live their lives without looking at themselves as being much more than some piece of protein that happens to have arrived in this world by some strange process that nobody quite understands. And Kedusha is the very antithesis of that. Kedusha is what's to elevate a person above the physical self. The realization that the physical is a temporary abode for the neshama. And I heard the Mashgiach of Panovich, Rav Reuven Ginsburg, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, once at a hesped, it was a hesped of Mir Yeshiva Berfo, Rav David Krungless, the Mashgiach of Ner Yisrael, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, a little more than 30 years back. And he made a rather remarkable statement. He said, listen, he says, I'm a Mir. I lived in Shanghai, I lived in China for 6 years of my life. If you consider 6 years of my adult life as a percentage of my entire life, it's a very significant portion of my life that I spent 6 years in China. And yet, I'll tell you, he said, I did not become influenced at all and involved in Chinese culture. I'm a Western person. I'm not a Chinaman. I came, I went, I was in China, I was there for 6 years, and I left it all behind. I didn't take any baggage with me. He says, if we stop to realize that our sojourn on this earth, as compared to Netzach Nitzach, the eternity of the soul, is a lot smaller period of time than 6 years in my life. He says, just as I didn't become a Chinaman in 6 years in China, he says, in this, you were not supposed to, in 70, 80, or 100 years in this world, become a Ben Olam Hazeh. It's the notion of Kedusha. And the Ramban touches it, I think, in a very, very beautiful way. Now we'll come back to Tamki Ikus Minatara, which is the principal shita that we hold. Now, the ramifications of Tamki Ikus Minatara are very, very significant. Let's start off with the most obvious one. And that is, let's deal with the issue very simply of what happens in a Sofik. Right? We have in general the halacha klolimah that Sofik derises l'chumra, Sofik derabonon is l'kula. So if Tam Ki Iker is Minat Torah, and when there's a suffix concerning that, then it's going to be Osir. If, for example, we're only dealing with a Din D'Rabbanan, then the suffix is going to become be Mutter. Now the Halacha makes a very interesting divide. Until now, when we're talking about Tam Ki Iker, so we're talking about the mixing of two different types of things. Add bread, and it's saturated with the tam of chaza. But what happens if I mix two things which are exactly the same? I take trefa one and kosher one and mix them together. I take a piece of nevela and a piece of kosher meat. Right? They were yishochten one after the other in the same slaughterhouse, the same shaychet. Right? And one of them, he messed up the shechita. He bumped into the wall with the knife. It's a shehiya. And therefore it's also. So the same shaykhah produced both of them. One's kosher, one's nevela. And I have the tam of a steak of the nevela went into a kosher steak. So now what happened? Is the tam of steak nothing that anyone could taste? That's the issue that we deal with min b'mino, when two things are the same. We'll come back to this yet. But I just want to show, to put it in sharp relief. Now, we paskin la halacha the tam kikus minatar. So if I took chazer and I put it into bread, or tam chazer into perhaps a roast beef from a steer, min b'she'ein amino, that's also minatar. If I took a tam of nevela, I cooked nevela together with kosher. So the tam of nevela was cooked in the same water, so the tam of the nevela went into the kosher. But it's min b'mino. So there the halacha is that it's minatayr, it's bottle bereif. As long as there's more kosher than treif, then minatayr would be mutter. The Rabbanan insisted that we have shishim in that case too. Now the difference is though, suppose for example, that I want to come to measure the amount of kosher or the amount of treif that there was present. So to see if there was shishim or there wasn't shishim. I made a lot of kosher meat and only a little bit of trefa meat by mistake that got mixed in. Now I want to know, was it bottle or not? So before I had a chance to measure it, it spilled out. So I lost a lot of the contents, went down the drain. So now I don't know how much liquid there was anymore. I could only estimate, but I don't clearly know. So, in my estimation, there may have been Shishim. It's possible. On the other hand, maybe there wasn't Shishim, but I don't know. So if we're dealing with min bimino, a nevela steak and a kosher steak, so the halacha is that misofik, since I don't know the facts are presently indeterminate, so the halacha is that misofik, it's mutter. Since Minatora, it was certainly more kosher than treif. So Minatora, it was certainly mutter. The question is, did I fulfill the din, the Rabbanan of Shisha? I don't know. Misofik, the Rabbanan, the Kula. On the other hand, I have another pot of food right next to it. And there I wound up with a piece of chazer in with the steaks. And that also spilled out, so I can no longer assess, measure appropriately the amount that was in the pot. I don't know. So the shaila is, there, since if we would pass Kintam Kikud Rabbonon like Rashi in the Rambam, Mutter, Salvik Rabbonon the Kula, but since we pass Kintam like Shora Basin or Rishayna, the Tam Gigas Manatayra, so therefore, I don't know if there was Shisha. I know there was Rope, but I'm not sure if there was Shisha. But the necessity of Shisha is Manatayra. So therefore, we see something the Rai says, L'chumro. That's one difference. Now, those that say that Tam Ki'ika Duraisa, there are two schools of thought in this subject. One is very simple. This is the view of the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam is always conceptually bold. Always conceptually bold. If you follow Rabbeinu Tam through Shas, he was undoubtedly, you see the brilliance and his conceptual boldness. Rabbeinu Tam says, cited by the Rosh, that I cooked chazer with meat. Or I cook chazer with bread. So now I have a person takes a kezias of that bread and he eats it. So the halacha is that he gets malchus. Well, tam kiker. Tam kiker means on every kezias of bread that I eat, since it's invested with tam chazer, it's the same halacha as chazer, tam kiker. You even get malchus for it. It's Rabbeinu Tam. Other Rishonim agree with him halfway, and that is that it's osam min atar. When they say it's awesome in a Torah, it's the equivalent of an Isur Aseh. But it's not to be treated as a Lo Yis Aseh, because there's no specific law in the Torah. They say, for example, if we learn from Geulei Midyan, it's by implication. It has, there it says, there's a mitzvah to kasher the kelim. So by implication, before I kasher the kelim, then I can't use it. Would prohibit the food from this way that they understand the pasuk, but that is only it's lava bo mechal asay. That's an implicit love, not an articulated love, and therefore they say there's no malchus. Also, in a Torah it is, but malchus there isn't. But why do they have a different notion? Their notion is the following: when would there be malchus? When there would be malchus is, let me just we talk about. That to be mekayim a mitzvah of achila, to eat korban pesach, for example, to eat a kezayis, or to violate a lav, of eating chazir, to violate the lav, the eating has to take place in a time which we call kedei achilas pras, which is the time you didn't eat three or four eggs. Depending, the Rambam holds three eggs, the Balei Tosfos holds four eggs. The basic point being a very, very simple point behind all of this. In all activity which takes place, that's spread out over time, we have to ask ourselves at what point it's continuous and what point it's discontinuous. And we're going to say, well, this person ate from the time he was born until the time he died at 120 years old, at 100 different points away along in his life, he ate a tiny speck of chazer. So now, by the time he died at 120, he ate a kezias in his whole 100 years on this earth. Speck by speck by speck, one speck here for every year for 120 years. So we're going to give him malchus, he violated the law. So the halacha says that's discontinuous. Those are considered random happenings. So it has to be pulled together, and this is a theme which goes through the halacha throughout, in all types of halachas. You have the same halacha in Hilchos Mechitzas, what constitutes a mechitza around a property for Shabbos. So at what point do I consider varied poles? are walls continuous, and at what point do they become discontinuous? So there we have the notion of Pirtzus Esser, that once it's a space of 10 amas, there the two pieces don't have any connection with each other. From 10 amas and less, then they're continuous. It's a notion which runs throughout the halacha. So they say the following. So that's normally the shear for achilas, kezayis, b'chdei achilas pras. You have to eat a kezayis, and the shear of kezayis, achilas pras. Now they say the following, that suppose this is the Rambam and these Rishonim agree in this regard, that until now we've talked about Tam. Now we can talk about Tam and Mamish. Mamish means, according to them, that there is, according to the Rambam calls this Mamish, they would still call this Tam perhaps. According to the Rambam, it means that if in an entire, let's say in three bayim, the Rambam's shear for Gedei Achilas Pras is three eggs, so if one kezayis, so we'll take a kezayis, we'll use our figure. The Rambam has a different share for kezayis. Let's use our figure. It'll be just the method. It's simple. Our share for a kezayis is that a kezayis is half an egg. So from that standpoint, if I have three eggs, and so to have mixed into these three eggs, 1/6 of it is Iser. Right? So there's one kezayis of Iser and 5 kezayisim of Heter, and they're all, it's all mixed together. Right, there's enough, but there was enough that went into this mixture, which gave 1/6 osur. So the Rambam says, if I eat the entire three bayim in the shir of kedei achilas pras, I get malchus for obvious reasons. I consume the kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, I'm going to get malchus. The other rishonim say, take the same story as the Rambam, but I don't have to eat three kezayis. I eat one kezayis, and I'll also get malchus. That's the case of malchus. There was in the mixture itself, it has a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. I don't have to eat, according to the Rambam, I have to consume all three. No, I have to eat one kezayis worth. That's enough. And the basic difference between them being, the Rambam holds that Iser is not going to be, that Heter is not going to become Iser. So consequently, then I have my mixture of 6 kezayisim, 1 kezayis of Iser, 5 kezayisim of Heter. That's the way it remains. There's 1 kezayis that's Osir, 5 kezayisim of Heter. So the only way for the person to get Malchus is considered he ate the Mamash, he ate a kezayis of Chazam. It was mixed together with a whole ball of 5 kezayisim of other things in a big sandwich, but he ate in the requisite time, he ate a kezayis of Chazam. So of course he's going to get Malchus. The other Rishonim invoked the principle of Tam Ki'ikar in such a case. And they say that if there was, the Tam was generated by mixing a kezayis into it, then this entire ball of Iser is now considered, it all became Osir. The Heter is no longer defined as Heter. The Heter is now defined as Iser too. And since it's mixed together with the kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, so on each kezayis that I take of this, that's considered that I ate chazer and I get malchus for it. Yeah.
That
the only Rabbeinu Tam, or even though... No, this even without the Rabbeinu Tam, because the Rabbeinu Tam went further than this. The Rabbeinu Tam said, I don't need kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, I took a little bit of Tam Chazer, and I put it into a kezayis of bread, and that's it. There's no pras, and there's no kezayis b'chdei achilas pras, and I ate that one Chazer, but I'll get malchus, according to Rabbeinu Tam. That's the implication of Tam Ki'ikra. Other Rishayim, it's a machlokes. Other Rishayim say that in his case, osam and atayr it is, but it's considered an iser asay, and therefore you wouldn't get malchus in that case.
But in this case, they do hold that you would get malchus.
Why? Because the mixture is made of a kezayis. They consider this. This is considered tam and mamish. In other words, since there is a kezayis mixed together with this whole mixture, and it's of a concentration that's more than a sixth, according to the Rambam sheet, more than a sixth, that's considered that you have mamashe. Once there's mamashe, then you mechuyev even for every part of the taruvus, each kezayis of the taruvus. That's their sheet. So, we started off a little bit just to appreciate, just in one little part so far, where the underpinnings of the notions of Bittul B'Shishim are coming from. The first issue that we're dealing with is Tamkik, when we're dealing with Tam. I'd like to come back yet to explain what Tam is. And this is so we're now in deal also with something else. What happens? There are mixtures which don't involve Tam. They have nothing to do with Tam. For example, let's say you have two hamburgers on the table. And the cleaning lady comes and she puts down a third hamburger. Examine it, and for all they look exactly alike. The bun looks the same, the hamburger looks the same, they smell the same. Can't discern. So now what do I do? What? Oh, so then we have a different notion. But that doesn't have to do with Tom. It's a totally different issue. We'll come back to. I don't want to visit that issue today. That's a totally different halacha with its own parameters and its own issues to it. How many hamburgers can one person eat? Two or three? Now let's say you have the appetite for three. You're 15 years old. You know what I'm talking about? You know? How many can you eat?
Three fish, one of them is straight.
Does that make a difference?
Yeah.
What?
Like
we'll find out. But not now. Yes, but if you eat three,
you hit the jackpot.
Right. So does that make a difference, la halacha or not? We'll see. What? Okay, we'll see. Now I want to describe, just to finish today's share, two scenarios of Tam that the Rambam spells out for us. One scenario of Tam could be, for example, I take a kezayis of chazer. I'll wrap it in cheesecloth and I put it in a pot of water, suspended near the top, and I have kosher food at the bottom. So what went into the kosher food? The chazer still, I take it out, I still have a piece of chazer in the cheesecloth, right? So some flavor came out of the, all that came out of some flavor of the chazer was dissolved into the water. That's one type of tam. Suppose I take milk, and I pour milk over a hot roast beef. And now, that's it. There's no, the milk is gone. It got absorbed by the roast beef, and that's it. That's already this is a significantly different case than the first. Because now the milk itself went into the, in the first case it's merely an extract of the chaza which was absorbed by the kosher food. Now I'm not dealing with an extract. I took milk and I poured milk on the roast beef. But there's no, but it's not, it's something which means it's, whatever, it's broken down, whatever it is. But it's not in its original form anymore. I mean, we all understand full well that flavor always has some aspect of the essence to it. That's what makes it flavor, otherwise it wouldn't have flavor. The second case is also considered tam, the Rambam says. That's la halacha. Both of them are considered tam. Two totally different types of scenarios, but they both fall under the heading of tam. So that's. Now maybe we'll end with one more. We have a couple of minutes left. So I told you that the Bittul B'Shishim, where does it come from? That Allah Moshe Mesinai. Most B'Shishim, it's generally agreed, it's not even a posik. The Gemara does bring a pasuk, cite a pasuk for it. And in the halacha of karbonos, in one of the karbonos, we have this row of b'sheilo that we give to the kohen. But it's cooked together with the rest of the karbon. So the question is, that is the chelik that belongs to kohen? It's halacha of kochim similar to truma. The rest, that's a different halacha. It's mutal lezorim. That's not mutal lezorim. So if I cook the two of them together, so the tam of the zorah b'sheilo went into the rest of the animal. So why is it mutar? So Chazal assess that the zroa of the animal was about was 1/60th of the animal, and therefore it's bottom. And that's what the Gemara cites as the source. The reality is, it's quite clear that that's not a real source, it's only an asmachto. Meaning it's a smach, it's a remnant. Why do we say that? Because I told you before that when do we need shishim? Min atara? Min b'mino, min b'sheino mino. Min b'sheino mino. The Zohar b'sheila is part of the aisle, right? So there's no, it's not a different halacha. It's not a different time, it's min b'mino. So that certainly doesn't need shishim min atara. So it can't really be, so it's merely a smach. Now, because of that fact, so if it were a Zeres HaKosuk, we needed Shishim, so we could go home, and that's it. We need Shishim, or put on a Shishim meter, and that ends with that. But we don't have any such Pasuk. So therefore, there emerges the following Machlekes. According to Rashi, suppose that you take you think something's bottle. It has more than shishim, it has 80 times as much, and we taste it. And lo and behold, there's some flavor, there's something still there. You can detect, barely, but you can detect the presence of something else. And that something else, in this case, was something non-kosher. So Rashi says that it's osur. On the other hand, Rashi says if it's less than shishim, even if you can't detect the flavor, it's always osur. Shishim is the minimum. But it could go above shishim too. We don't normally suspect that it did, but if we have reason either to think, and we do a tasting, or we didn't suspect, but we do pick up something there, as minimal as that flavor may be, it's still awesome. Most of the Rishonim disagree with Rashi, and they have it exactly the opposite. They say shishim is generally the outside realm, except in some special cases. But in normal situations, shishim is the outside realm. Meaning that said, even if you took onions and other things which tend to have sharp flavors, but by the time you get to shishim, it's bottle. If you pick up any sense of it after shishim, that's considered a watered down flavor and has no halachic significance whatsoever. It's gone. It's of no meaning whatsoever. But on the other hand, they say that many things, in fact, could be bottled at less than shishim. There is a notion in the halacha, the mechaber paskins like this. We Ashkenazim don't, and there's a whole many, many reasons that are brought up why we don't paskin like this. And there's an old joke which goes with it. And the mechaber paskins that suppose that I have a non-Jewish cook. Now, a professional is believed, even if he's not Jewish, to state certain facts if misstatement would have a negative effect upon his profession. So therefore, if a cook doesn't know how to pick up flavors, etc., it's not going to enhance his reputation. So the Bechaber Paskins is based on a Gemara that if a non-Jewish cook tasted a food, and it had 40 times as much, 30 times, he says, the butter is gone. There's no flavor of that butter in this roast beef. It's mutter to eat it. Ramos Machmer, the Ramos did not accept this. Whatever, maybe part of his Rashi sheet, as we pointed out, that less than shishim were always machmer. There are other issues too. So this is part of this issue. And then there's an old joke in the kashrus business which says the following, that it may not be true either. It's assuming one particular reason for this halacha. One reason for this halacha may be that we're concerned that we may not be able to produce a situation where the non-Jew doesn't know what answer we expect from him. And therefore, if the non-Jew knows what answer we expect from him, so then we don't accept his opinion. So the Mechaber was obviously not concerned with that. Beyond everything else, he wasn't concerned with that either. So they say the following, that if you have a Sephardi Mashgiach, so he can have a non-Jew taste the food for him. And if the non-Jew says that it doesn't have any flavor, so there are more pastas for an Ashkenazi is not allowed to be samech on a non-Jewish cook. So we're not allowed to eat it. But if you had a Sephardi Mashgiach, so he listens to the Mechaber. So he'll go and he'll eat it now. Now, if you have a Sephardish cook now tells you that it's mutter, so a Yid, from this rationale, so the Ramah would also accept If the concern is that we're not sure that he's it being 100% straightforward, if that's the concern, so but a yid, when it comes to a Jew, we would accept him. So now the yid is allowed to taste it, and if he says there's nothing there, so then we Ashkenazim would be allowed to eat it too.